Blog Talk Radio.
He's a man who's going to tell you like it is.
You can never be afraid of something that you don't know about. Now that's ignorance, and for us, ignorance is not bliss.
He's a man who's not afraid to talk about the real issues and not skate around it.
Don't you think it's about time that you got tired of where you are? I mean, you have got to be ready for God to do something for you and let Him move.
He's a man who loves his God, his country, and his people.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not too fond of the political state of the world, and particularly the U.S. as it is right now. But if you want change, you have to make it happen. You can't keep settling for less than what you ought to have.
He's a man who's sowing seeds of life, love, and liberation to anybody who's willing to hear.
There comes a point in time where everybody just needs to shut their mouth up and listen to God. And God is the one who will lead us, and God is in all truth. He'll tell us everything we need. That covers every area, every facet, from politics to church to you name it. God's got it covered.
He's a man that seeks the heart of God for the people of God. You're listening to Zero Today with Pastor Lorenzo Neal.
Good late morning and happy Wednesday to you. First Wednesday of December, last month of the year, 2018. Man, this year is going by pretty fast. We're glad that you have joined with us and listened to us, and we're excited. Always something going on. It is always something going on. Hope all you are having a wonderful day so far, and that you do have a wonderful day ahead. It is the Advent season, and so we're glad to. I didn't do my usual stuff. I'm hailing from Cajun Land, USA, here to present you with seeds of wisdom, insight, empowerment, and liberation, promoting a knowledge that is engaging and transforming, and helping you, empowering you, our listeners, to knowing and impacting the world around you. And as always, you are welcome to join us on this illuminating journey. And we invite you to join us on connect with us on all our social media, on our Facebook page, Zero Network on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. The show handle is at Zero Radio on Twitter. My personal handle is at Lorenzo T. Neal. So you can follow us there. Shoot us an email at Pastor Lorenzo Neal at gmail.com. Where else? Where else are we on? Wherever else we are on, we are on. So we're glad that you joined us. We're glad that you're listening to us. We got a. It's not much that I'm going to talk about, so I probably won't have a full hour long broadcast without me having to ramble about a lot of stuff. But I am going to talk about a few things, and I'm going to share reflections and thoughts on Advent and the. Symbolisms of Advent, symbols of Advent, love, joy, peace, hope, all of that. I'm going to talk about that. And I am going to share some insight, my opinions on some of the current Christian news. I think plenty of other people have spoken about, and, you know, I'm late, late to it. But we're going to talk as much as we can about some of these things that are happening. Firstly, the biggest news I think that has been happening is, of course, Dr. Jamal Bryant leaving Empowerment Temple and being the new pastor at New Birth Baptist Church in Atlanta, Lithonia, Georgia, leaving Empowerment Temple. And they do have an interim pastor who is a wonderful woman of God, Dr. Carol Lighten. Fuller, she's an awesome woman of God. So I think she's going to do wonderfully there at Empowerment Temple, and looking forward to hearing how, if the Lord and the bishops allow her to stay there, how well it goes. But I think she's going to do well, very well there. So there are two things, you know. Jamal, Dr. Bryant is an AME. He said in his last interview before his final sermon there at Empowerment Temple AME Church, he said that he's still going to be AME. And, you know, I know a lot of used to be AMEs who are pastoring in Baptist churches or started their own churches, and they seem to be prospering and doing well. You know, I got to be honest with you, every church can be somewhat restricting. It ain't for everybody. And sometimes you want to be able to do more and you feel kind of restricted. But God always opens the ministry and provides opportunity for ministry. So it doesn't matter what denomination you're part of. If you're following the Lord and the leading of the Holy Spirit, you can do ministry in anywhere. And the Lord will prosper if he so determines. But the thing I think has caught the attention of persons is the idea that, you know, he would leave a church that he started. He leaves a church that he started to go to a church that has dwindled in membership, and about the same membership. You know, reported membership roster at Empowerment Temple is over about 10,000, and reported membership at New Birth is about the same. It's like in AME Church, if you're going to get moved, you have to be moved laterally or upwardly. And it seems like he's made a lateral move just down to the south in the black metropolis of Atlanta, Hot Atlanta, and whatever else they call it. I don't know. Now, what makes this interesting, of course, is the fact that there are some who are saying that he did it for money reasons. I'm not going to hate on him. You know, if an opportunity like that came up, if I were afforded that, I probably would do it also. You know, you want to look at the advantage of it. And of course, from a financial perspective, I'm quite sure it would be very lucrative for him. But the church is, from what I've read, is riddled with debt. I think about $31 million in debt. If I may be mistaken, I've read various reports on that. And so the chairman of the board stated publicly that out of the 138 persons who applied for the position, Dr. Bryant presented the most credible way of assisting the church to manage and get out of debt, which is wonderful. You know, it's always good to have a leader who is visionary to be able to do that. When I came to my present charge, we didn't have debt per se. We did have a mortgage note because of a new addition that had been done. And we were fortunate, the Lord blessed, that under my leadership, we were able to be strategic in our stewardship and strategic in our planning. And we were able to pay off that mortgage early without penalty. And, you know, I'm grateful that we were able to do that. I'm grateful that the members bought into the idea that they could do it, that they didn't have to wait so long. And we were able to do it. But again, you know, lots of that was based, you know, it was built off leadership prior to me. And I just happened to be in leadership at the time. We developed a more strategic plan to a stewardship plan to pay off the debt. And we've acquired more debt and we've done the same thing so that we have not been burdened by debt. And even now, as we're investigating our other opportunities to expand both at the physical plant and ministry, you know, we realize that we may have to take on some debt, but we're trying to limit that. And along with our board, we're being strategic in how we can do that. And it's good to have a leader and a board that can be very visionary and strategic in doing that. So in that sense, I hope that he's able to lead the church. Now, the other thing is, there are two other side stories, I guess you can say, that go along with this. You have the first one being the scandalous history of New Birth, and I won't say New Birth itself, but the leadership of New Birth with the late Bishop Eddie Long, and you know what happened to him in I believe it's 2010, 2011, whatever it is, leading to the church having to make a settlement on his behalf for upwards to $25 million. So that's what it was reported. So it may, they may have contributed to the debt that the church is experiencing. I don't know how true that is. But again, because it was undisclosed, we may really not know. But, you know, the general estimate is that he settled his case for about $25 million. And, you know, once that happened, members lost confidence in him morally, as far as, you know, moral leadership, not as far as pastoral leadership. They still, I guess they had a sense of him as a, in pastoral leadership, but as far as moral leadership, a lot of persons left, and it went from nearly, I think it was upwards of 28,000 to 30,000 members, somewhere in there. I may be mistaken about the figures, but either way, those persons who felt that he had corrupted the ministry, that he had grown in, from his initial installation in 1987 or 8, I believe it was 87 or 88, somewhere in there, when he was installed as the pastor, and it was just over, you know, a few hundred members, and to grow that over a period of time. And I did travel to New Birth on a number of occasions, and I had been to the new sanctuary once, once after it was constructed, but I had gone to the prior to the building of this new sanctuary. I had been shortly after he was consecrated as a bishop in the Full Gospel Baptist Church Fellowship under Bishop Paulus Morton Sr. I had the fortune of traveling and attending a service at the old church, and boy, I tell you, man, it was fire! It was fire. I love being there. As a matter of fact, I at one time thought that I would find myself growing in that particular fellowship. And, you know, those were preachers I greatly admired from the early 90s and late 80s, early 90s. Not only were they on Black Entertainer Television, BET, you know, I got to see them, and I got to see how their ministries were, their sermons, and, you know, the liveliness of their services. And, of course, I wanted to be like him, Morton, Creflo Dollar, T.D. Jakes, who else? Several others I can name, you know, who were on television. Keith Butler, many, many black and white preachers, televangelists that I saw. I wanted to imitate, but the Lord led me differently. And I was greatly discouraged when I learned of his impropriety, particularly when it came to, you know, the idea that they were young black men. And I, when I heard about that, you know, I was greatly grieved, because, for one, we're already seeing in our community with the young black men high rates of HIV, well, and women too, high rates of HIV. We're seeing a whole lot of emasculation. And I'm not talking necessarily homosexuality, just the emasculation of black men over in general, you know, particularly those who are in the church. And so to see that these young men were affected by his actions in one way or another grieved me greatly, but no differently than it grieves me anytime, including when myself I have done something that has caused some type of harm to an individual, either by in unintentionally. And I hope I've never done anything intentionally to hurt anyone, but definitely plenty of times unintentionally where I've done something, you know, said some things, done some things, action that brought about harm, not never physical, but emotional, you know. Yeah, I've done that, and it grieved me to know that that happened to him, and I'm sure a lot of members felt that. So you had that scandal, and a lot of members left, and you put that in the context, alongside the scandals that have been reported on Dr. Bryant, and you see why this is a big issue. Why is it making news? You know, Dr. Brian was an avid community activist and socially engaged, had his church socially engaged on matters in that area. And it was wonderful to see him and having been able to share with, you know, share the stage with him, pulpit with him, rallies with him on a number of occasions. I greatly admire my brother in ministry. And, you know, I always try not to defend preachers, even though I find myself defending preachers because I am a preacher. And I find that I found that when he was taken up in a moral scandal, you know, I found myself in something similar, not just because I you know, I was divorced. I'm divorced. And although I didn't have an extramarital affair, I had an emotional affair, which you could classify as extramarital in a sense, even though it was not physical, and which led to me being divorced. Well, it didn't lead to it. It was one of the many factors that led to divorce. So, you know, infidelity is when it comes to church, and the black church in particular, has always kind of been one of these things that, well, a man is going to do what a man is going to do, or, well, he's a man before he's a preacher argument. And I always, when I hear that, it bothers me, but at the same time, it kind of eases me to, you know, do what I was going to do anyway. You know what I'm saying? Not trying to deflect or anything like that. But what I found is that it's easy for preachers to defend preachers, or it's easy for preachers to throw shade at other preachers, you know, because one get called and the other one doesn't. And either way, it's both harrowing on the ministry, you know, those who are coming to be ministered to and those who are providing said ministry. It's a big toll on us when we have our brothers and sisters who are caught up in offense. And Paul writes, and you know, you read this in Galatians, if you find a brother who's offense, you know, go to him, take into consideration your own self, lest you be tempted. But I find in today's environment, especially in the age of social media, that it's much easier to throw a stone and walk away than to hold oneself accountable, as well as call for the accountability of persons who committed grave immoral acts. And I say this because as a preacher, especially as a single preacher, I have committed grave immoral acts, and there's no doubt about it. You know, some of my members probably have been ashamed. I'm not a big name preacher, and you know, it's not anything big, but you know, when you're dating and you're single, and some of the things that come along with the breakup, it is what it is. And but the one thing I've learned to be as transparent as I possibly can when it comes to that, it makes it easier. And the other thing is to let my members know enough about my personal life, you know, what not too much, but enough about it to where unseemingly that comes to them, you know, when it comes to gossip or whatever they hear, they can, you know, kind of attest to the integrity of my personal life at best, as the best as they can. You know, they can't say everything, and I don't expect them to. And certainly if I do something that is, if I were as high profile as Dr. Bryant is, and I had done something, I would expect the same type of scrutiny that he was given from my members. I would expect a greater sense of accountability. And some are saying that, you know, that he didn't have that at Empowerment Temple, and maybe he is leaving that that place so that he can have that greater sense of accountability and start over, you know, from a moral perspective. I don't know. That's speculation. And I just know that from both of those incidents where it involved personal immorality failure, personal morality failures on the preachers, that the broad impact not just at their local congregations, but the broader impact of, you know, black Christendom in particular, is still kind of affecting them and affecting those persons they were called to lead. And it doesn't matter how bad or grievous the offense was, God still offers mercy and grace, and we should still be willing to offer the same. And I'm glad that New Birth thought enough of Dr. Bryant to do so. You know, I'm glad that they thought enough, the board thought enough, and the chair of the board mentioned this in his response, that while he made a lot of mistakes, he's willing to learn from them. He has learned from them, and he's willing to you know, move forward. And that's wonderful. That's a wonderful thing. A lot of people don't get that opportunity. I remember as a young pastor when I was in my early 20s, and I had a mother of the church, you know, a member of the church. We don't really have mothers, but, you know, she was an older member of the church, and she pulled me to the side and corrected me. And I did not like that correction at all. And I wanted to say, I'm your pastor. You can't tell me what to do. But she did it in love. She did it in a firm, firm sense of love, a stern sense of love. And it was because of that, I was able to be a better pastor. And I still have a wonder. She's in her 90s now. And she called me on Thanksgiving Day just to say, Happy Thanksgiving, Pastor. Now, I have not been her pastor since 2003 or 2004. That was the last, I think I was moved from that church in 2004. But she still calls me pastor. And I still go and visit with her whenever I'm in Arkansas, and I'm able to do so. And I have a wonderful relationship with her. And it's wonderful because I know that she loved me enough to make sure that, you know, I stayed on the right track. And I'm glad even now at the current charge that I have at New Bethel, I have the same. I have mothers and fathers who are looking after me to make sure I stay on the right track. And it's a wonderful thing to know. It's also a wonderful thing to know that I'm able to be accountable without fearing retaliation, you know, without fearing that somebody's going to use said things against me. I don't have that fear. And even if they do, I still don't, you know, I'm like Paul. They can talk about me. They can do this. But I know who I am, and I know for which purpose I am called. So it's a wonderful thing to have that reassurance. Everyone doesn't have that. And it's a good thing to have. But then the second thing that is sending a quick text message. The second thing that is a part of this storyline is Edward Long, Bishop Long's son, who is an elder at New Birth, and who on this past Sunday, as he spoke and ministered, expressed his he was pretty forward about him feeling like he was overlooked at as being pastor. And Ann Brock on her page on her blog, The Old Black Church, has this article, and it's entitled "Nepotism in the Church Should." And he asked, should Bishop Long's son have automatically been hired as the pastor? And now I'm a preacher's kid, and I don't like to say I followed my father in ministry. I wasn't raised with my father particularly, so I did not follow my father in ministry. I had a very distinct calling experience, and I had mentors who helped me understand that experience that when I was 12 and helped shape me and mold me and train me in ministry. I did not follow my father in ministry. My father, when he began to pastor, I was pastoring already. And I did, you know, he founded a church and I was able to visit and speak at his church. He had a little house church. And I was able to share that. And, you know, occasionally when I'm in visiting with him, I go to his church where he is on the ministry staff currently. But I know of a lot of preachers who follow their fathers, their parents in ministry. And particularly, I think one of the biggest examples, of course, is Joel Osteen. And Joel Osteen publicly said that when his father passed away, that his father asked him to take over the church, and that he didn't even he didn't believe he was called to preach. And because of that, you know, he wasn't trying to be a minister. He was content working on the ministry, the media ministry, and he had never preached a sermon, but had never done any type of leadership role in the church other than leading the ministry media team and, you know, the broadcast and all of that stuff. And now, you know, he's one of the more prominent televangelists around the world. But, you know, he was reluctant. And I can think of several others, prominent preachers' children, and who followed them in ministry. Ivy Hilliard and his daughters, Fred Price and his son, and, you know, recently his son stepped down for whatever indiscretion he had or whatever issue he had, and he's now been restored back to ministry there at his father's church. And I could go on and on. In the AME church, even with Jamal Bryant himself, Jamal is the son of a preacher who was a bishop in the AME church, who is the son of a preacher who was also a bishop in the AME church. So when he talked about, you know, three generations of AME, you know, his grandfather was a bishop in the AME church and his father was a bishop and the senior bishop for 8 years, I believe, in the AME church. And so, you know, he followed his father in ministry to a degree, you know, and when Jamal planted, Dr. Bryant planted the church, you know, he was seated members also because he was at Mother Bethel in Baltimore under now Bishop Frank Madison Reed III, but then Dr. Pastor Frank Madison Reed III, who himself, father, was a pastor and a bishop in AME Church, and his grandfather was a pastor and bishop in the AME Church. And we also have a couple others, you know, what we call legacies in African Methodism, who's, you know, I every time I hear someone that's talk about their fourth and fifth generation AMEs, and I'm like, man, yeah, y'all good. But, it, you know, in the AME church, is you know, the system is different. So you don't necessarily, because your pastor, your dad was a bishop, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a bishop. You know, by way of election, you might have that chance. And Dr. Reed, Bishop Reed, you know, ran on occasion. And the issue with him was, you know, your dad and granddaddy was bishop. And I think that was going to be a concern with Dr. Bryant, Jamal, is that his father and grandfather was bishop, and they did, aside from the scandals, you know, personal scandals, the idea of nepotism in the African Methodist Episcopal Church was scarier than that. They didn't want the idea of this seeming like you could be a bishop just because your daddy and granddaddy was a bishop, because we elect our bishops, and they wanted to see, you know, they want to make sure and maintain the sanctity of the election and consecration process in Methodism. And so, you know, but I know of a lot of preachers, several friends of mine, as a matter of fact, who have taken over the church that their parents either established or pastored. And Sometimes they succeed and sometimes they don't. One story of this is Tone, who now goes by the name of B. Slade. If you've ever followed him, I've had the opportunity to meet him, and I tell you, this dude is one of the best and greatest singers I've ever heard in my entire life, both when he was singing gospel and even now. You know, he's just a creative machine. I would call him the prince of gospel music, you know, because his creativity is just is pretty much is just great. And I hate what happened to him. In the mid-2000s, you know, he was at the height of his career musically in the gospel music industry. His father was pastoring a church, and he was on, you know, in ministry. He was doing wonderful things, transforming how gospel music was sang and performed. You know, before Ty Tribbett brought in that all that energy, you know, Tone brought in all that energy, and it was wonderful. It was wonderful. So when his father passed away, the mantle fell on him to take over the church. And at the time, he was struggling with, his sexuality. And he was not able to adequately articulate that to anyone. And it bore on him tremendously. It was a heavy burden on him, wrestling with that and the new role as pastor and the expectations of holiness that accompanied that, and this inward struggle of what he was experiencing. And add to that, he had gone through a divorce with his wife, and she's beautiful. She was beautiful. He had gone through a divorce with his wife and received little to no support from the church. Matter of fact, most of the people in the church condemned him for that. And as a result, you know, he like, y'all, I forget all of y'all. I'm leaving. I'm, you know, and I remember when he made that video, we were connected on social media. And again, I had the opportunity to have met him, you know, in brevity, never really a connection, you know, with more of acquaintances through acquaintances kind of thing. You know, the six degrees of separation kind of thing. But when he released that video and that song, and, you know, those of you can recall what it was like, you know, very, very, it was raw. And that was his way of releasing all of the agitation that he had experienced and the burdens that he experienced through that process while he was, you know, what he was going through. And, you know, he came out of it. I don't know, you know, what his ministry is like per se, if even he considers himself a minister. I don't know. Every now and then I see something he does on in Instagram. And that's about as far as I know what he does. But he still releases solid good music. But, you know, that is an example of where following the father can be considered as a failure. You know, he was up to the task musically, but, you know, I don't know if he was up to the task entirely. Regarding all that it was taking for him just to fill in the shoes of his own father. And Edward Long began his message, he said that he had been experiencing depression because he had been feeling overlooked and felt rejected. And he said, and you can read the article on Christian Post. They shared the article. Go there to Christian Post and see the article. He shared that he felt so rejected and overlooked because every opportunity, the first when after his father passed and his replacement was named, he felt overlooked. And he said that he had been in that church since he was 4 years old, and, you know, in every capacity of the church ministry he had worked. And he felt overlooked. And he said he was reluctant when his father called him and said, "I need your help." And, you know, he said he had the aspirations for a music career of some kind, you know, in media. And he walked away from that. He said, I just trust God. And apparently the Lord allowed him to serve in his father's ministry. And that he applied and still felt rejected. Now, he's still serving on as an elder of the church, and I'm not sure if that's a paid position or not. I'm sure it is. It must be. But, you know, there was this sense of a sense of obligation. I should be, because, you know, I'm my daddy's son, and it should come to me because my daddy made the church what it is. And if you want anything close to my daddy, that would be me. And that wasn't the case. I think about it's funny. As I was reading the story, I was thinking about the television show Greenleaf that comes on the OWN network. And I don't know if you watched that. I've only watched the first season in its entirety. I have not watched the second season or the current season. I've seen episodes, but I have not watched them in its entirety. I may just, you know, do a binge watch on that one day when I ain't got nothing to do, absolutely nothing to do. So that might be during the Christmas holidays. I'm just going to be binge watching and eating. But anyway, in the first season of Greenleaf, you have the father, Bishop Greenleaf, and you have the son. And I can't think of the son's name, so forgive me. That just shows you how much I really paid attention to the show. But anyway, the son was trying so hard to come out of his father's shadow. And, you know, his father did not think him well enough or capable enough to follow suit. So when the daughter returns, he automatically, or I won't say automatically, he gives greater attention and greater responsibility to the daughter that he admired, who had in her younger years preached and, you know, apparently was popular as a preacher, but walked away. And in walking away, created, you know, this void that the son tried to fill and that the son was unable to fill, which led to the son leaving the ministry. And the son, in an attempt to find himself and to make a name for himself, leaves the ministry, only to discover that he was being manipulated by the ministry that he was going to. He was being manipulated against to act against his father. And the father was like, oh, well, big deal, you know. It is what it is. And, you know, he was down for the fight. And if the son had to go down because of the fight, then so be it. Now, that was hard, but I'm quite sure there are a lot of preachers who probably feel that way about their children entering in ministry. And again, even though my father is in ministry, we don't have that issue. We do not have that issue at all. And that's a good thing. But, you know, I didn't intend to talk about this that long. I really didn't. I just, again, like I said, I'm playing backup. You know, I'm playing catch up, rather, to all of this that's happened over the few weeks that I've been unable to make a broadcast. You might say I was a little bit lazy post-Thanksgiving, pre-Thanksgiving. But after once I finished that doctorate and got all that, man, it was just hard. It was hard for me to write the sermon. It was hard. I mean, when I tell you that dissertation process took a lot out of me. Man, it took a lot out of me. And I give kudos to those who are in that process now. You are in my thoughts and prayers. Those who are aspiring to the doctoral level of education, you are in my prayers. And to those of you who didn't do it and just calling yourself doctors, well, you're in my prayers too. Let me take a quick break and grab me some water or something, and I will come back and give you my reflections on Advent and how I'm approaching it this year. I believe the Lord is always good, and I just I've been fortunate, and I just want to share some of that. So I'm going to take this quick break, and I'll be back.
We've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything, even mermuts. And we covered it, February 3rd, 2016. Talk to farmers. We know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
At Farmers, we've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything, even mermuts. And we covered it, February 3rd, 2016. Talk to farmers. We know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Welcome back to Zero Today. Again, I'm your humble host, Pastor Lorenzo Neal, Dr. Lorenzo Neal. I'm still getting used to saying that. As I go into this last segment, a little more serious tone, as we are now in the season of Advent, and, I know a lot of churches that don't follow the liturgical calendar year, so they don't follow most of the Christian observances aside from Pentecost, what is called White Sunday or Whit Sunday in some churches. Most don't follow the calendar year. They observe Easter, Resurrection Sunday. They observe Christmas on Mass of the Christ. And that's pretty much all that they follow. But in our Faith Reformation and Methodism and Anglicanism and the Episcopal Church, Roman Catholic Church. We follow the liturgical calendar, and the season of Advent is, aside from the season of Easter, it's probably the most one of the most celebrated times of the year. Advent anticipating the birth of Jesus of Nazareth like Lent, although not as long as the Lenten season, like Lent is, for me, a season of reflection. I like to use the season of Advent to reflect on God's grace as much as I do during the season of Lent, largely because for the most part of general church history, it was not really, celebrated. Not too many. The early church fathers didn't bother about celebrating the birth of Christ. And as the time passed, about the 4th and 5th century, as more Christians began to observe it with other, is some would say pagan holidays, but with other winter events, you know, instances and celebrations, they integrated that into what we now observe as Christmas and Advent. And largely for the four Sundays of Advent leading up to December 25th, you have hope, you have peace, joy, and love. Those are primary themes of the Advent season. Hope being the anticipation, peace being the revelation, love, joy, you know, again, all anticipatory moments leading up to that day in Oh Holy Night. The stars were brightly shining. I'm just kidding. But I am in this particular Advent season, I'm seeing it from a perspective of justice. And I don't like to be labeled as a social justice warrior. I don't believe I'm a social justice warrior. I'm not really a community activist, but I am all about justice and fighting injustice. That is just about as subjective now in America, because or more partisan now, because there are some things that are just should not be partisan, you know. Some issues of justice that should just be, you know, when it comes to the issues of life, particularly, you know, life in the womb and the lives of others, that is something that shouldn't be contested as when it regards to justice. So while we fight for those who are alive, you know, regarding domestic violence and gun violence prevention and all of those other things, you know, opioid addiction, and we fight for the lives of those who are alive now, so that they can have a fuller life now until they transition to be with the ancestors, we should do the same when regards in regards to those who have not yet been born. And I, you know, it's not about where you stand on abortion. You should still see life and you know, be concerned about how that life is affected by injustice. You know, and some will determine what that injustice is. But one thing I can't say is that we should be concerned about that life. Life is all. You know, life overall. And the other thing is, when it comes to issues, you know, the other social issues, you know, how we interact with others. The summary of the Decalogue says that we ought to love God with all our heart, soul, and mind, and love our neighbors and ourselves. And when it comes to issues of justice, on that, the Advent is representational. The Advent season is representational of why we should have that. On Sunday, we spoke, we preached on hope for all in sin, in that in the writings of Paul in Romans chapter 3, and chapter 1, 2, and 3 in particular, and how he underscores the fact that there was the law that was provided for the Jews to help them understand what righteousness should look like, what justification should look like, if they were able to keep the law. But of course, they couldn't keep all of the law. They couldn't keep all the law. And thus, because they could not keep all of the law, there was a need for them, for someone who could fulfill the law. And all that it was within that context of the law. And Paul said, the one underlying factor between the Jews and the Gentiles is that we're all sinners, you know, and the entirety of our condition of humanity. Those of you who ascribe to the doctrine of original sin, you know, there are some who don't ascribe to that, but that's fine. The idea that humankind was birthed with the condition of sin, there's nothing around that you can do about it. You know, there's nothing you can do about it. In that context, God gives us a hope for both redemption and justification from the penalty of our sins through the work of Jesus of Nazareth on the cross. And that work would not have been done had he not been born in Bethlehem, out of the line of David, through the line of Abraham, and which makes us heirs to the promise of Abraham, as Paul Letty writes in chapter 5 of Romans. And from that perspective, it's empowering to know that the Lord of the universe, God of the universe, is as concerned about our condition of sin, even before we were born, that he would himself, who knew no sin, become sin for us. That in and of itself is amazing to me and wonderfully loving. And when we talk about the idea of peace, and yes, he said peace, goodwill towards peace on earth, goodwill towards men. In this day and time, right now, I would love to see humankind individual peace. When I speak in peace, I'm speaking at the micro and not the macro. I think we speak too overwhelming of the macro, the larger. And because we want to see peace on earth, goodwill toward men, we focus on that. But we forget about the micro level of peace, the micro at the individual, the self. If a person does not have peace within themselves, they cannot in turn spread peace to the broader world around them. And unfortunately, I think we have a whole lot of unpeaceful folk in our churches, in our homes. They are bound by this underwhelming sense of uneasiness and anxiety and all kinds of disarray emotionally that keeps them without having this sense of inward peace. And the scripture does say that he will keep you in perfect peace if you keep your mind on him. And yes, individuals, we need to focus on, and as preachers, we need to empower people to get that sense of inward peace. Now, this is where, you know, many in the Western church miss it. You know, in the Western church, particularly, you know, we got caught up on, and particularly in evangelical, in American Christianity, evangelicalism, we brought in stuff from the world, and that just heightened the anxiety of who we were and who we are as humans. And because we, you know, we were taught to chase stuff, and being taught to chase stuff or people or ideas, whatever it may be, that we don't connect with inwardly with the Lord. And I go to, I've been to a Orthodox church, Greek Orthodox church, and the overwhelming sense of inward peace that is presented there, you know, the rituals, all of that is centered on seeing the Christ as he is and in engaging him in a manner that is transformational. And we miss that. We miss that in our church, particularly in the Black church, when we want to shout, 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 shout. And, you know, you ain't had church unless you shouted. And then you go home still broken. Even if somebody prayed for you, laid hands, or you fell on the floor, or you rolled on the floor, or you foamed at the mouth, or whatever you did, and you still go home feeling this sense of brokenness. That is when the micro peace, that sense of peace that passes all understanding, is when you should begin to engage that. And same thing with the idea of joy and love, you know, joy unspeakable and a love that is transcendent and unconditional, not just the agape love that we are to experience with the Lord, that we get from the Lord through this act of salvation, the salvific act that he did through Jesus Christ, but philo love, the brotherly love that we should have one for another. And I think this, at the micro level, again, is more empowering than at the macro level. Now, we are commanded to love one another. But we also are encouraged, as Paul writes, to allow the love of God to be shed abroad from our hearts. The only way we can allow that to happen is we are engaging him who is love. We say God is love, and that encompasses a lot. It's not just a love where he pats you on the back and says everything's going to be all right. It's also the kind of love where he says you did wrong and you deserve to be penalized for the wrong that you did, and I will correct you and help you see and feel what it, how it hurt me, how it grieved me. And, you know, in turn, that should cause you a sense of repentance. Paul writes, you know, I didn't want to write to you to make you feel bad, but if it makes you feel bad towards towards repentance, then that's all right with me. And that's the way God is. You know, God doesn't convict us of sin just to make us feel bad, but he convicts us of sin to help us see how much he loves us and wants us to repent and be in right standing with him. And we, in turn, must be the same way towards our brother and our sister. You know, how can two walk together except they, you know, be in agreement? And if they're not agreeing in love, then, you know, there is dissonance. And that dissonance creates a greater barrier to the work of the Christ. What God did through Christ was to be reconciling. And God himself is reconciling us daily, you know, as all people who come to him. He is reconciling, and we should show that reconciliation to our brothers and sisters, even if they are not a part of our faith. And that's the radical thing. You know, we have to show reconciliating love to even those we don't agree with, who don't agree with us, and even those who are not on our faith. And there are some say, well, you should just cut them off. Cutting them off is not going to do anything. It's just going to prove that you think that you're better. And Paul, again, in Romans chapter 3, says, are we even better than they? No, not by any means we are any better. Whether we are circumcised or not, we are not any better than anyone else. Anyway, I got to get out of here. I believe that as we put the time in to reflect on the reason Christ, Jesus of Nazareth, the Christ, was born the way he was born, then we will have a more fulfilling day of observing that, and a more fulfilling life from observing that. And as preachers, when we put that emphasis on those things, you know, again, at the micro instead of the macro, I think we'll be better engaged with ourselves and better engaged with those we are called to serve. And, you know, have a more rewarding and fruitful life in what we do. I've run out of time. I rambled too much on the other thing. I want you, if you like what I do and you enjoy the show, I want you to go over to Patreon, become a patron as little as $1 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/LorenzoTNeal and you'll see what you're able to do. You can help support this show. And I'm grateful for whatever you do, however you support. And if you do support, you're great. There's some great benefits that you will get. So please do so. Like the show page. Subscribe to follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on all our social media. And we greatly appreciate all that you do to help us do what we do. And we're grateful for all. So while we get out of here, we want to thank you and pray that you have a wonderful day, and we will be getting out of here as soon as I can find what I need to find. So other than that, you guys have a great day, and we will catch you on the flip side next time. God bless you. God keep you.